I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 484's After Show. It's the After Show. Here's what I'm going to start out with. As you were clicking on a button as we were closing out the regular show, and I thought about it on the way here tonight.
Okay.
I can get over, you know, I don't have to be that grumpy old man. I can get over the whole, like, year in review, all the Spotify's, all the other things that are telling you.
They're
like,
very popular.
They're very popular, and I get that.
I don't mind them, actually.
I don't.
I'm not going to grumpy old man them.
Yeah, I don't care, but that's great. What does irk me a little, and I can't be original in thinking this, I'm sure.
Usually we're not.
Why the hell are we seeing that in the first week of December?
I agree with that.
Like, well, I guess
if you set a standard from like December 1st to December 1st,
that becomes your year.
Becomes your year in review,
which would make sense if that's what they do. I'm guessing they have to, right? Yeah. Because otherwise, like,
because we still have 3 weeks left in the year.
Yeah, and these started popping off 2-ish weeks ago already.
Oh yeah, Spotify's was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, how many hundreds of hours or minutes you've streamed of any given service or of any given song and various artists and things you've listened to? I just think maybe. But my year in review is like it's not here. Like there's a whole month of December,
a 12th of your
yeah. Anyway, and I'm sure in some fine print it says exactly what you're saying, which would make perfect sense. Somebody also challenged me and said I was an idiot or crazy or how do I not listen to music. I said I literally don't even have a Spotify account. I listened to 0 minutes of Spotify this year, and they're like, how do you listen to music? Good question. I really don't. The only time I listen to music is if there's nothing else I want to listen to in the car that's played on my YouTube Premium, that's played that way. The only time I'll listen to music is then, and at that point, it's exclusively 90s on 9 from my Sirius radio. That's the only time and I'm not on the phone or trying to catch up on listening to any other kind of news or current events. So the amount of music that gets played is negligible.
And I'm actually really worried in general. I don't have a Spotify account. I don't have whatever.
Well, how do you listen?
Because I'm now an old man who's completely burnt into everything that he wants to listen to.
You listen to CDs?
No, I listened to the CDs that were burnt onto my phone years ago. I still have on my phone hard downloaded. You know, there's no Spotify about, I don't know, a couple thousand songs from all my CD collection. They're just on here. Like you would have.
They're like MP3s.
Like MP3s.
Okay.
And so I plug it into my car. I listen to that. I listen to podcasts. I listen to. Which is actually going to kind of bother me because I think I heard that Apple is going to stop developing iTunes. And if that happens, I don't know how I get music on my phone. I need to research it.
Shitty streaming service.
I don't want a shitty streaming service. I want the hard, like.
You want to listen to what you want to listen to.
I want to listen to what I want to listen to.
You want to listen to House of Pain. jump around. You want to be able to just click on it, and it's there.
Because I have, not only on my phone, I have like live concerts, things that were, you know, bootlegged. That you
pirated, yeah.
Bootlegged is the term, Terry. Okay. In music, it's bootlegged. Okay. bootlegged music from different live shows and concerts and things like that, that you just they're just not available on Spotify. They're not available anywhere. And if things like that go away, I don't know how I continue to listen to some of those things. Or there's songs that, you know, like I said, that were bootlegged that don't even exist. There's a couple songs actually that I had that my wife and I played at our wedding that are not available on any CD. They were never released. We literally heard one or two of these songs at a concert, and I found the bootleg of the concert, downloaded it, and actually took time to like boost up the audio and make it sound a little bit better. How does someone like that happen? You just don't. That goes away.
Until you just take that audio file today, either, I guess I was thinking you have to put it some kind of visual to it. You don't. Take that audio file and bring it into like an Adobe Premiere, some video editing software, and then just turn it into some form of video.
So, and then upload it to my private YouTube?
Yeah, or something like that.
Sure.
I mean, that would be a really like archaic workaround, but it would serve the purpose of what you want to do.
It would.
So, or you would then, even if it's not to your YouTube, you could just save off all those video, quote unquote, video files to your, because it's your phone is going to play .movs
forever.
Ever. Your phone, probably. Your phone's going to play MP4s forever. Mm-hmm. So,
and again, I'm 120 years old. I still like it when a band, one of my favorite artists, yesterday, announced he's releasing a new CD, a new album. He probably will. Who knows? That's probably retro these days. A new album, dropped one song from it, says the album will come out in 2024. You can get it, you know, on streaming services, or you can download it from Bandcamp. Mm. I always download them from Bandcamp. If I want an album, I buy the album, and I'm old that way. But I've also seen, I mean, look at any service suddenly. Look at a ton of streaming services that you just can't stream particular TV shows.
They're not available. They have them on there for a certain period of time,
and then they're gone.
They take them off.
We'll just say, what was it? It was originally, there's the original like version.
Seinfeld was on certain.
Yep. But I think of like Scrubs, because that had so much music on it.
Sure.
That you just can't, a lot of them, they can't get licenses for anymore. Either you can't stream it. So they will pull out like specific songs or things like that, that you just can't get them anymore, or you can't find them anywhere. I don't want that to happen to my music. If some band, you know, if I was a huge Swiftie and suddenly Taylor Swift said, I'm pulling all my music from Spotify because they made me mad, which she has threatened to do before, suddenly what? I can't listen to Taylor Swift stuff? And granted, I have never listened to Taylor Swift. Sorry, Hannah Macbeth. But in general, like I don't want that risk. So I like to download. I'm not against Spotify. I have no problem with an account. I listen to Pandora sometimes because it just, I type in 90s alternative rock. I hit play. It plays every song I ever heard growing up. It's great. I'm a very, you know, I have it.
You got to own it.
I kind of got to own it. And that's just how I feel about a lot of music. Plus, in general, much like our Patreon, I feel like when I buy the downloads, it supports the artist better. Mm. So, you know, as opposed to Spotify, which, you know, they get 0.00003 cents or whatever per every stream. When I buy a $10 album, I might only listen to that album 20 to 30 times in my life. But I got no problem if they get $6 or $7 then. Like, that's just kind of how I want. It's how I want to support the people.
Yeah, you only like to rip off the big guys. I know.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I hear you.
I know. And maybe, again, maybe I'm worried that an app will come out with something and say, hey, you can still plug your phone, and here's an app that'll let you upload all your music. That's great. And if that's the case, I haven't heard of that, but I also haven't heard when they're going to get rid of iTunes for Windows and stuff. So,
you just got to buy a special Apple-based
dongle. Oh, it's probably $300 or something. Dongle. Yeah. Special dongle.
You have to use something like that anyway. All of this, I could wrap up, too. And maybe it was just a headline, and clearly I didn't know any of the specifics, but what crossed my feed today was a clip of, along these lines, was Snoop saying something about how Spotify let him know that he had 8 I think it was 8 billion streams. I'm going to assume that was just in the year. 8 billion streams of for him or of him. And that translated to $45,000, which is interesting because, yeah, that sounds like peanuts. You got to think about,
oh my God, yeah.
You got to think about how many people have more streams than what he did. And even if it's not a leader, it doesn't matter. 8 billion times to then only here it's 40 translates to $45,000. And I know this is all part of the you know, this gets argued within the whole what's the word I'm looking for, the not the protest, the oh my gosh, what's the word, I'm strike and
oh, sure.
And SAG and all this other stuff. It's all things that are way beyond the scope of what you and I personally have to deal with or worry about, but it is interesting.
Yeah, Taylor Swift had 26 billion streams of her songs in 2023. Hmm. So, in theory...
Well, so far.
Yeah, so far. Yeah.
And I won't claim to know how any of that works, but...
Yeah, there's all sorts of licensing between songwriters and singers and artists and labels that I don't even... fathom. So anyway, that's just my that's my goofy take on the streaming surface. And I listen to a lot of music. I listen to a lot of podcasts, but I also listen to a lot of music.
I guess we've seen a few of the fun little social media things that the Disc Golf Pro Tour has done throughout the last couple of years of you know, when they go to interview or talk to a player and they I think of specifically Taylor Swift, actually, where I think they had asked a bunch of our players, like, what's your favorite Taylor Swift song? And some who, I think Isaac Robinson maybe knew one or something like that. He guessed one. Paul Macbeth knew one or two.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And then Calvin Heimberg didn't. And I love seeing all those kind of fun interactions.
I understand Calvin, kind of. I don't understand how you can't name a single Taylor Swift song. Like, Shake It Off. Like that, like I can only name Shake It Off. And I think I heard someone say, I heard Alden Harris say the love song.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
So good. I can name two Taylor Swift songs. I'm sure maybe I could name a few more if I heard them. But that is.
Well, two's not that far from zero, if you think about it that way.
But not, I mean, Shake It Off was a huge hit.
I mean, she's. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but at the same, I think I would have felt that way more 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Not just because of her, but I'm just saying in general.
Yeah.
But now I've come to the realization that when something is not in your, like, at all in your lane.
Yeah,
in your bubble or in your lane whatsoever, how everything else can be so wildly blocked off completely, indefinitely, entirely, mm-hmm. like... I can also understand that as well.
It just that music and specifically her permeate the scene. It's not like like people that say, "Oh, I've never seen Game of Thrones." Like, okay, cool. Maybe you're not into sci-fi. Maybe you don't have HBO or whatever. You know, I just, it's crazy.
No, I you don't have to sell me. I'm being a Swiftie. I mean, I'm all on board. all right. Yeah, of course. Now I can't think of like the other six things that I was thinking about over the last day or two.
I posted this on our Discord and I showed you just a few minutes ago. This weekend I crushed my fingers. You can see that they're purple if you're watching the YouTube, in a garage door.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's real pretty. They kind of hurt. I can only bend my fingers this much right now or whatever, but I went outside this weekend to put a ladder away that had been sitting out behind my shed for a while, and I didn't want it to sit through the winter. Went out there, the ladder was gone. I'm like, uh-oh, did someone sneak onto into my fence and take it? And I was like, oh, well, maybe my wife actually put it away, which I wouldn't have expected. I opened the garage door halfway, saw the ladder in there, and then went to immediately close it, not realizing that just barely the tips of my fingers got caught between just the tips of the panels of the garage door when it came down. Crunched them really good. A lot of 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 letter words that I don't think even exist anymore or should ever be said out loud. I'm kind of shocked that the neighbors didn't come over because I screamed and I didn't cry, which is kind of shocking. But I thought maybe I broke my fingers, or maybe I lost a finger or something when that first happened. I had to double check. I thought for sure I was going to lose a fingernail. I don't know if I'm going to. I don't think so. The way I pinched them, but they seem to have stopped swelling, but they hurt like a son of a gun.
You should just suck on them.
Oh, no, I don't think so. It's hard to type right now, honestly, because I can't feel like the tips of them a little bit. They're just because they're bruised and swollen. It was not a pleasurable moment. I'm very lucky it's my left hand and not my right hand, which I use obviously for writing, more typing, doing anything else you do with your right hand. I don't want to learn how to do it, but eating, anything like that. So that was my weekend. That was not pleasurable. That was on Sunday Sunday afternoon, kind of like around 1 or 2 o'clock. Thought about going to the emergency room, but I kind of checked them out and I'm like, they can bend them. They don't feel broken, but I don't even know how the tips of your fingers. And then I thought, if you did fracture or break the tips of your fingers, what are they going to do? Like, how do you fix that? Do you just wrap it up? Cause I wrapped it up at first. Cause I wanted to sleep. I thought, well, they still kind of were in more pain. So I wrapped them up and then I was like, I kind of kept them above my head or under the pillow. Last night I found myself sleeping right on my hand. I was like, oh geez, I guess they don't really hurt as much anymore. They hurt when I put pressure on them. That's for sure. Still. But that was just a flat out big fat dumb move by me. Lucky me.
One of the many highlights, I will admit, I had a great weekend. Thanks to, again, so many different people, including the opportunity to go out to dinner with Pete Uliberry and with Pete's mother, also known as Paul Uliberry's mom, Pat Perman. She had graciously picked me up from the airport. And then next thing you know, we went to a place to get some pizza. Pomo, which it turns out to be one of Ricky's favorite pizza places in Scottsdale. Just phenomenal company throughout. And it's funny that I got such an opportunity to hang out with so many different people throughout the entire weekend. Also, I can give a high recommendation for Fate Brewing. I've now been there a couple of times in the area. They have some incredible food and beverages. And I've had the pleasure of being there now a couple different times, too. That was on another day. Sunday night. After the tournament, I was able to get my editing on and get second round largely put together, get that edited, and then had time to get picked up by none other than Spicy Boy and his significant other, Jillian, and went to the Mesa, I don't know if it's the Mesa Center for the Arts or something of that, Mesa Performing Arts Center, something of that nature, whatever the name is, and I had the pleasure of seeing Jimmy Carr.
Oh, nice.
The British comedian. I don't know how many of you are familiar with him. He's had a number of specials. I wonder how many they're different.
So you
I don't know how many are on Netflix.
You third wheeled that.
Yes.
On their date.
to be fair, how it all initially unfolded is about 2 or 3 weeks ago, he posted to his Facebook saying, hey, my awesome girlfriend just got me these tickets. We're going to go see Jimmy Carr. I'm so excited. And I remember in my head thinking, oh, that is pretty awesome. Jimmy Carr, I find him pretty funny. I started doing some research on where he was. He's on a worldwide tour. I thought, well, that's too bad he's in Arizona. That's great. Then fast forward to the idea of the Big Arm Challenge happening and me possibly coming out to cover it. Then fast forward into the idea of filming the Big Arm Challenge and then still getting to go to that show at night. He ultimately had two shows. He had, I think, a 7 o'clock and then a 9:30 show. And there were some tickets available for the 9:30 show, which is what they had already booked anyway. And so although I didn't sit next to them, I actually ended up sitting only like 3 rows or 5 rows back from them. I was able to get a ticket and then join them. And I offered to drive myself and go and pretend like they were on their own date. And they didn't even have to pretend like they knew me. But no, we ended up going to Mellow Mushroom for pizza and other food beforehand. If you haven't been to a Mellow Mushroom somewhere in the country, do yourself a favor and go there as well. Delicious. Miles Parkhill, a guest from a few weeks ago, is who turned me on to Mellow Mushroom.
Do we have any in Milwaukee?
We don't have any in Wisconsin.
I have not heard of them.
Oh, really? You've never been to one? Okay.
Nope.
Yeah, you need to get to a Mellow Mushroom. They are, every time I've never been disappointed.
Take me away.
So we went there and then ultimately went to Jimmy Carr. And I'm just going to say, he was hilarious. I mean, obviously, I knew exactly what he was about, what he was like as a comedian. he was just flat out hilarious. And interestingly enough, and I don't know if this happens, I've never seen it really happen this way before. No opener at all.
Oh, okay.
Like he came on stage and went for a full 90, almost 100 minutes, but a full 90 minutes. No opener, nice. Nothing to, yeah, no warm up, so to speak, or anyone before him. So therefore no MC or anything of that nature. Came on stage 90 full minutes and then some, and that was it. It was awesome. So I don't know if any of you are Jimmy Carr fans. Some of you are, I'm sure, don't even have any idea who he is, and that's fine too. I think he's a fairly well-known comedian. Again, the fact that he's got a number of specials and has been around for quite some time. I don't know if raunchy is the word. I don't know if I would use raunchy. What did they say in his bio?
I don't know.
James Anthony Patrick Carr? What? Presenter, actor, known for his deadpan delivery, so on and so forth. I don't know. I think he's hilarious. He probably goes in as like maybe the second or third best live comedic show I've ever seen. It was
That's good.
Absolutely phenomenal. So if you ever get a chance, check them out. The one thing they do before the show, and I'll spread this tidbit, is they put up on screen and it says on this large screen before everything gets started, as people are just kind of filing in, they say, hey, if you have a shout out or a birthday or a story or a joke or anything you'd like to share, text it to this number. And I'm thinking, this is some kind of stupid setup, or this is some kind of, like, you're just begging for some kind of trouble.
Just something for him to make fun of, or just play off of.
Or just even, like, how legit it is. I don't know why. I didn't have anything anyway. I steered clear of it. Well, Spicy Boy decided to text to the number. At the very end of the show, he goes through, hey, here's some of the things. Some of these are from previous shows. Some of them were for just flat out jokes. And then a lot of them were based on what people text in that night. Hey, we're here because my brother just graduated college. Can you shout him out? Or some people would text in their own joke, some of which were also very, very funny. And Spicy Boy decided to text in to say something along the lines of, there's a well-known disc golf journalist here in the crowd, and he's a big fan, and his name's Terry Miller, and it would really make his night if you roasted disc golf, which
fine
is fine. So Jimmy, it's all up on screen. He reads that off, and then he goes on to then kind of make fun of disc golf. A few people, he had to confirm what it was, and he, of course, slightly ripped on it and ripped on disc golfers and whatnot, and that was pretty much it. Did it make my night? No. But it was I guess, humorous. So, Spicy Boy, thanks for, kind of putting me on the spot. I will admit, when he read it, like some of the other people that he was reading, I thought he was going to call out and say, where are you? Who is this?
Oh, like try to.
And he didn't. He didn't. And I was okay with it. I didn't like jump up. And go, hey, guys, it's me he's talking about. Mm-hmm. I just sat there and took it. And he ended up interacting with somebody in the very front row. And that was about it. So I don't know. I guess I'm kind of famous now. Jimmy Carr said my name.
Clearly.
Talked about disc golf.
Yeah.
Okay. I won't chalk it up as any of that. But all in all, last note on that, with fees, I want to say my ticket was like $41.50.
That ain't bad at all.
Insanely reasonable. I've been to dozens, maybe even 100 nightclubs or comedy clubs in total. Most of them range anywhere from $5 to $10 to $20 to get in, all of which then will come with a two item minimum, whether that's a Coke or a beer or a pair of hot dogs. I don't know. They all come with a two item minimum, usually a two drink minimum. Usually the drinks are, of course, absurdly priced.
$12-$15.
Yeah. For, you know, a can of Corona, they'll charge you $12 for. So the fact that I went to this in this really nice auditorium theater-like atmosphere, and it would, with even the service charge, I want to say it was $41.50 So insanely reasonable as well. I don't know if the earlier show was any more or not, but nonetheless.
Yeah, when 2 weeks ago when we went to go see
Pete Lee,
there was like a special that we got, that it was, I think each person paid like $50 for your ticket, but then you got a $200 food credit. So more or less, you know.
Wow, per person?
No, $200 was for the table. Because
okay.
Yes. Like, no, Jesus. How am I putting on $200?
Can I get 9 pretzels to go?
Yeah. So it was 50, because there was a table for 4.
Okay.
And then you also, you know, I think we each paid $50 and we got a $200 credit. So, that went for food or alcohol. It was like a dinner credit. So that's what we had done. That's one of the reasons why we did it. And we ended up going just barely over our bill by like $12, I think.
And then you stiffed him and walked.
Oh, God, yeah. No tip either. Yeah. Duh. I'm just tipping on the $12. That's all I'm spending, right?
Yeah, right.
There's a dollar or $2 tip.
Perfect.
No, Terry, I'm not that kind of person. But yeah, so that was kind of cool. That was at the Improv. Have you been to the Improv?
I haven't. That's not far from
it's
where
like,
I live. Yeah.
It's
in the corners, as they call
it. Yeah, over in Hales Corners, kind of between where you and I live. A little closer to you, but yeah, definitely. It was nice. I didn't even realize it was there until my wife was like, yeah. Oh, yeah, we're going. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that just opened in the last couple of years as part of that development over there. Question in from the board was, Terry, do you use the same airline for all your work travel? Oh, don't even get me started on airlines, even though there's a funny story to this. With the exception of when I go to Bend, I almost exclusively always use, in every possible scenario that I can, I fly Southwest. I'm cheap. It's cheap. I don't understand what most people hate about it. To me, that's ridiculous, but whatever. I've always loved Southwest. I could literally give you an hour-long dissertation and podcast / whatever presentation on why Southwest I think is great. I do use them. However, with traveling to Bend, Southwest does not go into Bend. That's their downfall. To be fair, technically it's Redmond. I'm sorry, not into Bend. The Redmond Airport in Oregon is not that big in the first place. In fact, they don't even have like jet bridges. You're walking in and off every single plane, and Southwest does not go into Bend. And so with that, after some consistency of going out to Bend, I then ultimately started being loyal to United Airlines. And so now I'm really happy to say that with some really slick maneuvering and some really budget-friendly, conscious decisions and looking and whatnot, I am both on United and have earned some status with United and now also with Southwest. So there's your long-winded answer to, do I use one exclusively? I still use Southwest primarily whenever I can. Funny enough, I posted that I was with this last trip this week, I'd get A-list status for next year, which is I'm a big fan of earning for 2024, which I then got. Paul Macbeth messaged me and said, oh, I'm actually using Southwest for my first time tomorrow. He's got some secret. He's going to Texas for something tomorrow, folks. So if you want to, I don't know, investigate.
Stalk him? Where exactly in Texas?
I can't say that. But no, he says he's going to Texas right for a short trip, and he lives in the Jacksonville area, so he's taking Southwest for his first time ever. I said, this isn't for you. It's for us broke people, is what I wrote him. And but he said it's a direct flight, and so he's going to get his first Southwest experience. So
I mean, just tell him check in early. That's the key. Check in early.
So, that's my story in terms of who I like to use. Southwest is great, because they give you free bags. Your first 2 bags are your 2 bags are free, up to 50 pounds. You can then still have a carry-on and then still have
like a computer
backpack
bag
or a handbag of sorts.
That usually is enough to get you through a week.
This weekend I had all 4 bags and it was only like a 3 or 4 day trip.
Yeah.
I brought Frisbees to sell, which I never got around to doing. So, okay, hopefully we answered that question. That means you get priority seating each trip on Southwest.
Yeah, maybe Paul's going to help Nico design the course. Who knows? I mean, Nico have always been buddies.
That could be. I don't think it is. It's a different city that he's going to, but anything is possible, I suppose. I guess we'll find out. Perspective ahead. Oh, see, Eric on the board talking about Mellow Mushroom in Bradenton, Florida is good. Yeah, it's. I really think it's a fun. It's just a really, really solid chain. That's not too big, but I do feel like it's a really solid chain. And my favorites there have always been their pizza, but it seems like everything on the menu is really good. Okay. All right. Anything on the kind of on a tangent to disc golf that's been significant or that has popped up that it wasn't for the regular show that you can think of?
Not that I can think of. We're getting into, today's the 12th. Next week, obviously, we'll be the 19th. We're getting very close to Christmas. So then we're going to have it on the 26th. Yeah, we might have to skip that Tuesday on the 26th. I'll figure it out. I don't know what the deal is.
Well, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
A healthy discussion that had no permanent solutions or answers, but there was a healthy discussion. Vibrant
about refunds. You're talking about that.
Yeah, that's one. I'll quickly touch on the one I was just initially thinking of. Sunday night, there was also a discussion about basket. I'm going to say basket sizing.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The discussion largely talked about if baskets, and I know this isn't like new by any means, the sweeping conversation of basket sizes, but if baskets are smaller in any capacity, vertically, horizontally, or both, if baskets became smaller, but maybe caught really well, catch as good or better than they do now, but there's just a smaller spot.
Not possible, but okay.
If they were, do you feel like that puts a higher premium then on all the other facets of the game? I mean, your drive becomes more important inherently, your mm-hmm. approach, because you need to get closer.
Yeah.
Do you feel like our professionals, and I'm talking our top tier elite disc golf pro tour type professionals, do you feel like they could or should be subject to making it tougher in that sense? Having a smaller basket. Like, do you just at face value, do you like that idea of them playing to a smaller basket to make the game a little bit harder?
I'm not opposed to it. I'm truly not. And here's what I think. I've thought about this. The basket itself. You would make the chains a little bit smaller and the basket itself, the bucket, a little bit bigger. Because I've played on Marksman, mm-hmm. smaller things. There's a lot of times you hit what is a relatively good putt, but because the contraption is smaller, you tend to hit the pole more, especially if you're dead center in the middle. And the kickback is a little bit greater, so it feels like they kick out more often. So I think if the basket itself was a little bit bigger, that kickback would fall into the bucket more. Because I do think that if you were to hit something like a Marksman dead center like that, it should go in more often than it shouldn't. Because there isn't... Unlike our
you could putt lighter.
You can
hit center chain.
You can. Unlike our current basket, which I think you've got a lot more space to play with left or right, mm-hmm. to hit chains and not center pole and have it stick. With those, you don't get that. And yes, you could putt much lighter. I would never say that. I do think that there is room to just have the basket a little bit bigger, add 3 inches, and then if you lower the chain contraption, if you shrink that, that is maybe what I would like to see. If that now on the actual conversation of should they do it, I'm okay with that. I don't really care. I know there's a big. The conversation always goes to, well, gosh, then everybody has to change baskets. And it's like, no, you don't. There's no reason why every course would need to change baskets. You could change baskets if you want to play with on exactly what the pros play on, but I don't think you need to. There's no reason why a consumer basket can't be a better or easier catching than a top pro basket. That's, you know, top golfers have different clubs and balls than a lot of your standard golfers. So well, that's kind of how I feel.
And I guess maybe even to further your point there, in theory, if there was a pro tour event taking place, I'll just say in Waco, and a smaller basket, a tougher pro style basket was to be used for the tournament and all the tournaments, what if those are all just in the ground 7 days prior to the tournament, right? The pro tour is already jumping ahead to each event to prep for the next event. And so when they get to a Waco and the last event is still, you know, is happening the weekend before, but they get to Waco to start prepping and setting things up for the course, they then take out the 18 baskets that are there. Mm-hmm. In the obviously in the pin locations, but they take out the 18 baskets and then have a basket that then adequately fits into those mounting sleeves, and the Pro Tour just has one or two of those sets of baskets, and they're bringing them and taking them out every single event.
I'm totally cool with that. I am fine if we get to a point, and again, we are every other sport is looking for better scoring. Offense is the thing that most sports are looking for. Baseball is, you know, shortening the pitch clock to help, well, shorten the games in general, but also it does give the hitters an advantage because the pitcher doesn't have as much time to sit and warm up, whatever. Basketball as well. They look at the lack of traveling calls, look at the lack of, like, it's just an offensive game. The NFL, same thing. You can't, you know, look at all the offensive penalties they're doing. Hitting the quarterback, defensive pass interference. Everybody's trying to make their sport score better and more and improve it for offense because that seems to be what people want. People don't want to see a Las Vegas versus Vikings game of 3-0 was what we had this weekend. Mm. Nobody wants that. Nobody. It's ugly. Even if it was a really good defensive battle, nobody wants to go into a game practically unless it's a 0-0 game. Or as I've always said, if you're going to a baseball game and you get a no hitter, awesome. If you get a one hit versus two hit game, that's a boring game.
Well, yeah.
And granted, you could have been watching some of the greatest pitching. It doesn't matter.
Pitching isn't as sexy as home runs.
It's not as exciting as hits and home runs. So are we looking to decrease the "quote unquote" offense and scoring of our game, maybe. Do we want it to be harder? Well, I don't have an answer. Honestly, I'm just asking. I don't have an answer.
Well,
I don't think there's a right or wrong.
The perspective in which I heard this weekend from one of our top pros was that is also a way to kind of make things tougher, change up the scoring, but also without adding, you're not adding to a course. You don't need, because we've seen, especially in our careers, we've seen courses go from that 5,000 to 6,000, 8,000 was wild at one point, then 9 or 10,000 kind of became crazy.
Now we're hitting 10 to 11.
Now we're hitting 10, 11, 12,000. The point is, at a certain, you know, just like they're going to, you know, regulate or govern the ball size, or not the ball size, the distance in which a golf ball can travel. This is kind of in a similar sense. This will have a similar effect. Is, hey, if we make that much more emphasis on driving and putting, or I'm sorry, on driving and approaching, and you're not just able to cash, you're not Ricky or Gannon Burr and cashing in everything you see from 60 feet and in, and there's that much more emphasis on getting it close. That way, you're kind of, you're not shortening the course clearly, but you're having that effect and maybe making things more competitive.
Maybe. I mean, I think we're pretty competitive right now. I think we have a lot of players who can get up and win. I don't know if, again, hampering somebody who is good at like 60-foot putts is the right move or not. I don't know. Again, I don't have the answers on this one.
Tim, that's not so. Tim chimes in on the board and says Aaron Gossage wants bigger baskets. Quite the contrary. In fact, it's funny you sniff this one out. So maybe there's been other conversations, but this was a very hearty discussion that largely was with Aaron Gossage, Ezra Aderhold, and definitely Anthony Barella. We brought Ricky into it at one point. This was a very heated, and not in a bad way, but a very heated, spirited conversation that took place. And Aaron was talking about ways to make the courses tougher without making them necessarily longer. And it's not that he has a problem with the length. He just keeps, he feels like,
there's only
if
so
I
much-
understand it, yeah, there's only so much land and only so much we're going to be able to expand. And if we want to, quote unquote, tiger-proof or keep any constraints on the course, like you can't always just take a 10,000-foot course and turn it into a 13,000-foot course. Like there's just sometimes just the physical restraints of being able to do that. This way, yep. it keeps you on the same course, mm-hmm. Largely hitting a lot of the same lines and doing a lot of the same things, just more of a premium on the actual drive and the actual approach. Mm-hmm. But like you said, I feel like kind of somewhat punishing somebody that can rein them in from 60 feet. They're still going to be a good long range putter. They're still going to make more, but is their advantage going to be significantly decreased where it doesn't almost even seem fair? If Ricky, we'll just say, makes 10 putts from outside of 55 feet in a whole weekend, and somebody typically only makes one from outside 55, you make the basket smaller, you make the putt harder to make.
Now Ricky's only making five of those?
That's the question.
Just does play
he,
pretend.
Does he go all the way down to two or three? Or, depends and that on, other person still makes the one or zero? Like, how much does it compress? Again, these are all things we don't know what will happen. I guess it depends on the size of the basket. And are you punishing anyone or not in doing so? Because we all know the better putter's always going to be a better putter, probably, no matter what the range is. To a certain degree.
No, I don't know. I think that would, we'll just play
depends
pretend.
On how the basket's shaped, right?
Depends on how the basket, because Ricky, as we know, is a very direct and hard putter. Always has been. Mm-hmm. For better or worse, we've seen Ricky hit some phenomenal long putts, but we've also watched him walk up to 22 footers, hit him dead center hard, and they come back in his face.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really what we want to see? Like, you know, Rick, well, does that penalizing, you know, are we taking away a skill in order to make the scoring more difficult? Are we taking away the putting skill? You know, should again, everyone can putt lighter. Does Ricky have to learn now to do more of a loft putt instead of a more direct putt? I've said this about baskets in general, that I think you need to, and people don't like to hear it, but the way our sport is now, you need to play to the basket. If you know a basket has a weak spot, don't aim there.
Yeah.
And some people are like, well, I'm just going to aim at the middle no matter what. I'm like, oh, cool. Then when you get one that spits, you can't complain.
Yeah.
If you have a basket like I had played pretended, you need to have more of a, I'm going to say, a Paul Macbeth style putt that kind of comes up and comes down. It's not a direct putt. It needs to be softer. It needs to be coming down as you come in, as opposed to straight at it. So, I don't know. You know, does that stop the aggressiveness from 40 feet? You know, when you
have a 22 foot comeback and now your knees are knocking a little bit more. Yeah, I mean, 22 footers are tap-ins.
Yeah, is that better for our sport to watch someone like an Anthony Barella, who we know has had issues with the power of his putts, missing a putt and going 40 past it and then hitting a 40 foot comeback?
Mm-hmm.
So now suddenly does AB be like, well, I'm just going to kind of give it a little up and down and loft it in? Are we? I don't know. I think. I still would love to see the Pro Tour do this for one event. Just pick an event. I don't care what it is. And say, guys, this is a tester event. It still counts towards Pro Tour. It still counts. We still want you here. But we are going to play to these modified baskets. I want to see what the results are. Let me see the percentages. Where are Circle One putts? Are they where we're normally seeing like Andrew Marweed hit 90% Circle One? Does that drop down to 82%? Because
and is that 82% though still leading?
Exactly.
The field,
that's what, right? I'm saying. Yeah. It does everybody move down? Do we see a big shift? And that's going to be really hard to tell on one event because anyone can have a hot event.
Sure.
Statistically, you'd want a bigger sample size, but I would love to see him try. I'd love to see one event where that happens, or maybe make it an annual event.
Yeah, some kind of,
you know, the
almost exhibition, but yet have who knows?
And the problem is, if you make it an exhibition, then half the pros won't show up because it almost needs to be an event that counts. So does that happen at a Ledgestone? No, not really. But does it happen at an Idlewild? Does it happen at Jonesboro?
Did you see?
Yeah,
they try a lot of different stuff.
They do.
Food for thought. All right. Another quick point of conversation. Last week, there was a post. Someone was talking about being injured and then reaching out to the tournament director. And the tournament director, by my understanding, essentially saying, okay, here's what the PDGA refund policy states, and here's what, therefore, I'm going to refund you. Basically, we're going to follow the refund policy to a T, or letter of, you know, by the letter of the law. Here's what the refund policy states that we can do, and this is what we're going to do. And the player in particular didn't care for that and said, I'm injured. Essentially, I'm injured and I'm a pro, and it's 4 or 5 days out, I believe. I think it's ridiculous I don't get a refund, a full refund. And of course, a healthy discussion also ensued from that little discourse. I feel like I have
a good perspective because
I have a seasoned perspective in that I've run a couple hundred tournaments. I've also been the player at even a 300 or 400 other tournaments. I've had a lot of those different opportunities, and so I can certainly understand, you know, valid, what I feel like are valid points, you know, 1 through 10. Mm-hmm. And I can, on the other side, I can understand or propose valid points 1 through 20 on the other side. And you could go from there. Some of the questions that I brought up is, for me personally, is the idea of, especially pros. And I had a pro at my event a few weeks ago. Is literally just before tee off, 2 minutes before tee off. And it was discovered that this pro thought the tournament was on the next day.
Oof, rough.
And told one of the card mates that he was supposed to be with. So they got a hold of him, said, hey, where are you at? You're on our card. We start in like 3 minutes. Where are you? And he's like, oh, shit. I thought I played tomorrow. Complete confusion to the situation, obviously. Mm-hmm. People make plenty of honest mistakes. I certainly believe him in the case that he, for some reason, thought he played the next day. Okay, honest mistake. He's playing in the pro division. Does he deserve a refund?
No. I think as the tournament director, that's, I feel, up to you. But I would like to see that be consistent. But every scenario is different as well. If someone doesn't show, calls you, you know, five holes in and is like, oh man, sorry, I got drunk last night. I just couldn't get up this morning. Mm-hmm. Can I get my money back? I don't necessarily think that is a good reason. In general, no, I don't believe they deserve their money back. I think as a TD, you could, if you want to, I've got no problem
is
with that.
And again, this is intentionally supposed to be a bunch of what if scenarios, mm-hmm.
I'll
hypotheticals, but is that fair to the rest of the field?
No, because they came expecting a full field with a specific purse size due to that full field. Because if someone signs up for an event, and we have a friend that does that, he'll look at the size of the field before he signs up and be like, there's only three guys there. I'm not going to bother signing up for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a little different these days because there's less of that. Now it's more of a race to get signed up, and a lot of TDs are setting aside specific number of spots for divisions. But if I'm in a four-person field and suddenly two people decide not to show up on the final day, let's just say you're MP50. And
you mean on the first round?
Just at all. Like if you're in a, if two people don't show up at, before the first round, they call, "Hey, I'd like my money back." Cool. My purse just went from, we'll just say if everyone paid
$200.
I was gonna say everyone paid $100. It went from 400 down to 200.
Sure.
And now you paid both players that were gonna get, you know, I know you can never count on cashing, like it or not. There are some people that probably go there and be like, cool, I'm better than three of those four people. I want to get that money. That's why I feel like for the last minute ones, I don't have much sympathy short of a true, probably like drama story.
But even then, everyone can make one of those up.
Everyone can make one of those
could.
Up. Now, here's what I'll say about a week out, 5 days out. And I know the PDGA has rules on this and whatnot. Is there a wait list? If you fill that position, I don't care how late it is, that person, whoever gets out, should get their full money back if you fill the position. Even if it's the morning of, if someone calls you the morning of and says, hey, I just can't make it, and the TD says, you're in luck. There's a guy here who wants to play. He showed up randomly. He wants to play. If that spot is filled, I think the person should get their money back.
Okay.
That's how I feel. Now, there's obviously caveats for amateurs. Did the TD get custom players packs? Hey, I ordered you a 4XL.
With your name on it.
With your name
so stitched on it. So it's not just a 4XL. It's a 4XL with your name and PDGA
I wanted to pick a size that like wouldn't go with everybody. Or you pick an extra, extra small. Guess what? You're a junior, and there's only two of you, and now suddenly you're not going to come, and I got a trophy for your division because there was going to be one of you, and things like that. Like, that's all money out of the TD's pocket that's just gone. So that is why I kind of feel like if you're not filling the position, you know, that's it. Custom shirts, custom stuff like that, as long as it's known ahead of time. If I sign up for an event and I don't know that there's custom stuff made, then, I mean, am I to blame for that if something comes up? Like, I would hope that the TD would make that known. Like, oh, hey, we need your shirt size because we're going to get a custom shirt made for you. And at that point, then, the TD can say, hey, I'm going to take that shirt out of the entry fee. That's a $30 shirt that's coming out of the entry fee. I will get you the shirt. We'll send it to you, or you can pick it up, or whatever you need to do. It'll be available for you. If you want to come later today and pick it up, or I'll ship it to you and take the money, take the $7 or whatever shipping costs are these days. I don't know. Take that out. We can do that. Fine. But in general, if we're not...
Okay, so going back to pros.
Yeah, if we're talking pros, if the spot's filled, give the guy the money back.
What,
period.
What if you're not the waiting list will say ended on or registration or waiting list and all that ends Friday night. So you have your tournament Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. You're playing MPO. The tournament starts Saturday morning. Friday night Friday nights when all registration ends or cutoffs, there's no ads or drops or whatever per posting. Saturday morning at 6 a.m., you write the TD and be like, hey, I pulled my groin. I'm not going to be there today. Whatever your reason is, let's just say you pulled your groin. We're going to go with that one. You pulled your groin. I can't come compete today. Even if there was a waiting list 10 deep the night before on Friday night, the waiting list has been officially ended. And to be fair, those 10 people on the waiting list,
they're not going to show up, probably.
They all live a half hour or an hour away. They don't want to show up next morning. No. And quite frankly, the TD doesn't want to be effing with doing all this switching come the next morning. So they say to them, I'm sorry. Sorry you can't make it. Sorry you pulled your groin. But do they get a refund?
No.
Okay.
No. It sucks. It's unfortunate. But unless that spot is filled, and we'll just say, let's say the waiting list ends on Thursday for pros. Hey, after Thursday... The event starts Saturday. I'm not swapping anybody. Player pulls out on Friday. I don't think that it's the TD's responsibility, although they can, to go to the wait list and be like, the first guy on the list. You could just say, sorry, you don't get your money back, and I'm not filling the spot. I would have no problem with that. Now, it would be nice if the TD maybe reached out to the to a person, whoever was maybe first on the waiting list, and said, hey, I did have a last minute withdraw. Can you, would you like to come?
And were, that guy says, no, actually, my grandma passed away. I'm not, I'm no longer interested in being on the waiting
exactly.
list.
Exactly. If he's, if the spot isn't, it's, I don't believe it's the TD's responsibility after that wait list time goes to start going down the list manually. But if they did, and if they fill that spot, give the guy the money back. If the spot is filled, the person should get their money back. If not, yeah, you get nothing.
Yeah, and I think one of the questions naturally that unfolded out of this scenario was when, if it's an, if someone says it's injury related,
still don't care.
Does that
sorry.
Carry different weight than any other reasoning?
Nope.
And I felt like there was a lot of responses within this thread that's like, dude, you're injured. That's not fair. Yeah, you should just get your money back.
Great. My cousin died. Great. Yeah. My, you know, my car, my engine fell out of my car. Man, that sucks. It's going to cost me $2,000 to fix that.
I'd like my $150 entry.
Because I need that. I'm going to need that to fix my car. Too bad. I'm sorry. It's really unfortunate. But I can't wreck the rest of the field. And you are asking the rest of the field to take a hit because you did. Sorry, can't do it. Won't do it. It sucks, but we need to have established set of standards.
Yeah, and there are. And to be fair, every TD, because of some leniency or mm-hmm. some other liberties, has handled it differently. Me being one of them. And sure. You guys have heard me rant throughout the years as my positioning on refunds has slowly but surely stiffened over these last few years. I used to be as absolutely generous and liberal as you could possibly humanly be with a refund. My stated policy for more than a decade was, if you call me mm-hmm. up to the 2-minute warning and say you can't play, I'll refund you. And I did that, I think, with like 99 or 100% certainty. Mm-hmm. I just did it. As the PDGA continued to then develop an official refund policy, I largely ignored it and still was gracious in terms of in terms of that player, but maybe not ultimately to some of the other people that were playing. I would always go with the side of the with the withdrawer, so to speak, is where I largely, and I just got to say personally, I have backed off of that and have become a little
more stiff,
a little stiffer.
Stricter.
Yeah, and stricter,
understandable
as time has moved on.
And do you know the policy? If you fill the it's within like a week and you fill the spot, do you have to give the person the money back?
Well, I'll just read it because there's of course as we've
there's
just
so
been
many
talking
rules,
about it.
That's why I didn't.
Yeah, know. And there's a it all comes down to largely when it is that talks about it, and when you're talking about. I'm just going to read this is the PDGA Rules Competition Manual. Let me find the number. Just, 1.03 Withdrawals and Refunds, Section D. Mm-hmm. It says, players who officially request to withdraw from an event 15 to 29 days before the start of the event will receive a 100% monetary refund of their entry fee minus up to a $10 handling fee only if their spot in the tournament is filled. Mm-hmm. By a player who is on the wait list at the time of the withdrawal request. If the player's spot is not filled, the TD has the choice to provide either a 50% monetary refund or their entry fee or just the player's pack or mm-hmm. what the player's pack would have been had they received. Yeah. In the case of a player, a pro division, refunds, section E is, players who officially request to withdraw from an event within 14 days of the start of the event and prior to the event's published closure of registrations and waitlist.
That's blah, blah, more blah, so blah. What I care about.
Yep. And waitlist replacements will receive 100% monetary refund minus up to a $10 handling fee only if their spot is filled.
Perfect. So then that's exactly what I want.
If the player's spot is not filled, so that's saying
which makes the most sense.
You could basically keep. Like up to a $10 handling fee
yeah.
if it's filled. Okay. Then it goes on to say, though, if the player's spot is not filled, the TD has the choice to provide either a 25% monetary refund, or just the player's pack that they would have received had they attended, minus the cost of shipping. In the case of a player in a pro division for an event without a pro player pack worth at least 25% of the entry fee, the TD will provide the 25% monetary refund. So that last sentence is really the payoff in this scenario. You withdraw within 14 days of the event. You paid $100 and your spot is not filled with someone that's on the waiting list at that time. You are only entitled to $25.
$25.
And that's what I believe was being offered in this situation, the 25%. And there was issue with it. And I was shocked, or not, I was shocked to see that the large majority of people that chimed in on this thread believed...
thought they should get the money back?
Yeah, 100%.
No.
Anyway, it was a healthy debate. You guys can chew on that however you wish. I do love that the PDGA has created a policy.
Yeah.
It's in the competition manual. I don't want to say it's the law, because it's not, none of that's a law, but there's an official stated policy. What I dislike is when a TD wants to uphold an official PDGA policy.
And they get run on.
And they still get blasted for it, because they're upholding a very legitimate policy that's in place. And that doesn't make me feel good. As a TD, that doesn't make me feel good. I don't know that that's really fair. I mean, I feel... it's similar, but not to like, hey, officer, I know I'm doing 75, but everybody does 75 through here. You can just let me go. And the officer's like, well, no, today I'm going to write a ticket. You're doing 75 and a 65. Yeah, I know, but I do 75 here all the time, and so do all my buddies. We always do 75 here. Most of the people do 75 here. And the officer's like, yeah, but today I'm writing you a ticket. You're doing 75. Like, they're just upholding what's in place. Now, if you want to argue if the speed limit should be 75 or not, like, unfortunately, that's not going to do you any good with the actual officer. Like, that needs to be taken up with the local municipality and who's ever writing the laws. In this case, have a conversation with the PDGA if you think that the policy needs some tweaking yet again. But I think it's, I don't like the idea of, like, we're just going to blatantly dump on the TD that's just simply upholding a posted policy.
Yeah. So basically, the PDGA is doing what I think they should be doing. Like, if someone fills your spot, you get your money back, minus whatever handling fee, the $5 or $10 handling fee, because that could be flat out just, hey, those are PayPal fees. Like, that's probably what more so, like, hey, yeah. I'm sending money back and forth. In theory, that should be done via, you know, refunds and whatnot. So there could be some, the TD should not take a financial hit on that at all. So that makes a lot of sense. And I think that the PDGA policy makes sense. But I think we've bored everybody now.
Yeah, maybe.
But we did. That's fine. That's what we're here for. Terry, what's not boring? Patreon.com/SmashboxTV. I promise we're not going to refund your money.
No, we're not. Wait, nope.
Nope, we're not. We're going to keep it. We're going to use it. We're going to continue to make the podcast better and...
Provide some giveaways
every single week. This week, we have 137 people eligible for our giveaway. We had a lot of people sign up on the free smashbox.tv/weekly giveaways this week.
You guys getting in on the action.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for going to, and
thank
and doing
you for
that.
Thank you for not yourself free.
And not supporting us. Thanks for not supporting us.
I really want to win something from these guys for free.
God, come on, let me do it. Yeah, so 137 people are eligible for our giveaway. Patreon.com/SmashboxTV. Terry, as always, I ask you, what number? I've sorted it by donation amount. So the $1 donators are up at the top, all the way down to the $10 donators. And then everyone that signed up is via the free one is at the bottom.
Mm. Just because, not that we love you less or think any less.
Just
of
that's just because of the way
bottom
it's sorted.
Dwellers, no.
Yeah, because there was nothing in that field, so that's the way it was sorted.
All right. Well, with that, I mean, this was the big arm challenge for Parker Welk, was the third person to win it. It was like my sixth time going to Arizona this year. Well, let's go with four. It was the big arm challenge four that I covered this weekend. So four is going to be the number that pops out at me.
All right. Our first number is 55. Second number is 49. Third number is 9. Our fourth and final number.
Hopefully somewhere near the bottom. But
seven.
Near the top, I mean.
Shorter, Terry. It went shorter. So 7. So let me take that off so I don't dox everyone's address. Scroll all the way up to the top. And 7 is Chris Neal.
Chris.
Congratulations, Chris Neal.
Appreciate you.
Supporter at $1, which we're happy with. We love you, Chris.
And thank you've been on board for a while.
You have.
And we very much appreciate
it. Very much appreciate your support for the longest time. Like Billy Joel.
Oh, for the longest time. Oh. Mm-hmm. Speaking of copyrights.
Speak of Billy Joel.
No, I'll give you guys the explanation. You don't hear really any ambient sound during holes one on either of the broadcasts.
Because they had walk-up music.
Yeah, my video this weekend, they had walk-up music. So,
which is why the DDO stopped doing that. DDO GBO used to do that, but there was, at some point, all the post-production people were getting their copyright strikes. And so I think there was some discussion with the event staff being like, yeah, we can't put this live on YouTube. Because we could get a copyright strike for it. It demonetizes your video, which is costing some of the people at the time a couple $1,000s possibly on some of these streams. So that's why DDO doesn't do the walk-up music anymore, I feel.
And they had it for Saturday at the Big Arm Challenge. Everybody got to select. You went out to a Google chart and put in your walk-up song or your key off song, whatever. I like concept.
I love the concept.
Like a huge pain in the ass for TDs. I don't ever want to do it because it seems like it'd be, I'd have to get a Spotify account maybe. No. No, but it seems like it'd be a huge pain in the ass to do. So God bless everyone that's done it. Good on you. Sunday, so everyone's different, you know, had different songs on Saturday. On Sunday for the second round, they didn't do individual songs. They just had music playing of some kind, inspirational or pump you up kind of exciting music. Mm-hmm. And I still heard it. Obviously, my camera still heard it. So large, I think it was just hole one that I ultimately just finally muted it. And I literally was playing with the levels in on my editor. Like if I bring it down 10 decibels or 20 decibels, YouTube's smart. No, and it's still like picking up that thing, even if it's really faint to some degree. Yep. So at a certain point, I was like, F this. I don't need any copyright strikes. I don't need any demonetization. I'm just going to mute the tee offs on one pretty much.
They should only do copyright free music. Walk up.
Yeah, that
you have to pick amongst these 22 YouTube copyright free songs.
Yeah, there you go.
people are like, I don't know what this is. Like, just pick one.
Yep. That's what you get to listen to. Yeah, that would be a good workaround. So yeah, so if anyone's wondering, which you probably weren't, but if you do, that's exactly why the first hole, the first tee off shots sound like there's no ambient sound. Well, because I muted it. I don't want to get put in YouTube jail. Ray, you did ask a good question. I'll quickly touch on it. Yes, who knows when it's going to happen, but one of the cool things, and we could probably even do it on Smashbox if we get to that point as well. The day... essentially, that I've established that I get 100,000 subscribers. I'm going to go back 2 months from that day. And if you were supporting me at that point or earlier via Patreon, you're going to get part of a you're going to get a free disc sent to you. So if you sign up today and I hit 100,000 next week, well, then you're too late to the party and I still appreciate it. But if this is meant to, thank anyone that has been with me for at least 2 months or longer. Some people are going to get a good deal out of that. So I very much appreciate it. I said at 95,200 is the number. I don't know. It could be 2 years yet. Whenever it happens,
could be.
I'm good with it.
Until I come up with
it. It may never happen.
It starts going backwards.
What I'm going to assume, and this is just kind of a behind a hunch behind the scenes, I'm going to assume is... well, maybe YouTube doesn't. I would think as you get closer and closer, and maybe they've already done it, at a certain point, YouTube comes in and does like a legit clean or cleanse.
Oh, I don't think so.
Of sweeping out fakes / bots.
I don't think so? No.
They're trying to hold back those silver play buttons?
Nope. I
feel like they will. I think I'm going to get to 98,000, and all of a sudden they're going to do a cleanse of some sort.
72,000. Jesus, how did that happen?
No, and I think it would wipe out a couple thousand, would just be a guess.
I don't think so.
Maybe it won't. Who knows?
I think that would be disheartening. I think people would be upset.
I agree, but
I think people would be upset about
it. It should be earned, though. Like, I don't...
What's earned?
Like legit, legit.
So if drivers. I sign up for a YouTube account like 8 or 9 years ago, and I subbed to your page, but then I kind of never check YouTube. Is that an account you would wipe because it hasn't been active for 8 years?
No, but you're like that was a real account at one point.
Maybe. How do they know if I just literally signed up for one day and then subbed to your account and I just really never, or I have a different YouTube account and profile? Because like me personally, I have like 3 different YouTube profiles.
Yeah,
I got. My Smashbox, I've got a Skip Ace, and I've got a work one.
Yeah, well.
And I subbed to different things on different ones. But if for some reason I left my job and that work account sat there for...
Just make sure it's subbed to me.
I will. For like 10 years, is that an account you wipe out because it was real at one point? But what if I only had subbed to one channel? They can't. It's really hard to tell if there's no activity and intent.
I don't know.
I'm just saying, I don't think they would do that because I think it would be extremely disheartening. If you were to do that, you would almost have to do it earlier than like right before 100,000. And second of all, my understanding is that they don't really do that at all. What service was I just listening to where they were saying that they tend to do that in waves? Maybe it's Instagram or something, because people try to obviously game the system, that they just randomly, they don't, without any warning, it's like every so many months they purge.
Yeah.
And so that you don't know when it's going
to happen.
I think
that happened to my YouTube account not that long ago.
It might.
I think that had happened, and that's what makes me think, like, if they do it, I'd be okay with it. I understand. I don't want to earn anything that's not earned.
But it might be earned. You just don't even know it, Terry. You just don't even know it, Terry.
Anyway, so. Well, thank you guys for coming along the silly ride here tonight. Thank you to Parker Welk, who joined us. Again, thanks to the entire
Love him as a guest.
Arizona family for the awesome weekend and my special date nights, including one Spicy Boy and Jimmy Carr. For Johnny V., smashed up fingers, literally smashboxed. Yeah. Anyway, Johnny V, I'm the Disc Golf Guy. That's 484's after show. We'll see you next week. You step inside the Smashbox.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.